21. I'd like to call this meeting to order. I'm calling the Complaint Screening Committee of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. Ms. Michelson, could you please do the roll call?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Gill?
Here.
Dr. Meyer?
Here.
Ms. Shreve?
Here.
We have quorum.
Thank you very much. The agenda item number 3 is the approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the regular session and executive session minutes for March 17th, 2021?
So moved.
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Item 4 on the agenda is this case discussion and decision portion. The Complaint Screening Committee, pursuant to the Arizona Revised Statute 32-2081H, may dismiss the complaints appearing on the agenda or may refer them to the full board for consideration and action. Complaints dismissed by the committee shall not be disclosed in response to a telephone inquiry or placed on the board's website pursuant to ARS 32-2081H1. And upon the vote of the majority of the quorum, the committee may go into executive session on any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 431.03A2 to review confidential records, or A3 to receive confidential legal advice from our board's attorney, Ms. Galvin. For those in attendance, please be aware the chair reserves the right to change the order of the items on the agenda. A person or representative of a person who has filed or received a complaint and is present at today's meeting may make a brief statement up to 5 minutes to the committee when prompted by the chair, and the committee members most likely will have questions for that individual too. Please, this is very important, only use initials when you're talking about a patient or children. Be aware that the content of many records involving in these complaints is confidential and the content should not be discussed in an open meeting as we are in right now. Please be advised the committee will go into executive session if we need to discuss confidential records. And with that, we will now move into our first complaint, complaint number 2112, Dr. Vaughn Testosterone. I don't think I pronounced that right. Could you pronounce it for me?
Pronounce Sutsuris.
I'm sorry, say again.
Sutsuris.
Sutsuris, thank you. Dr. Meyer, you're the lead on that complaint. Would you like to provide a brief summary?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Give me 1 second. Thank you, Madam Chair. This is complaint number 2112. Dr. Sutsuris, license number 4502, and the complainant is RB. RB's saw Dr. Sutsuris from July 2020 to January 2021 for individual therapy through his private practice, and all sessions were through telehealth. On January 20th, 2021, RB sent an email to the board inquiring or indicating she had a bad experience with a psychologist and was interested in filing a complaint. And the complaint was received on February 15th, which detailed multiple allegations, including that Dr. Sutsuris discussed his dating personal life in sessions and stated that he sexualizes clients, encouraged RB's sexual feelings towards him, abandoned RB by inappropriately terminating therapy, offered RB a termination session if she agreed not to submit a board complaint, and delayed in sending RB her clinical record. RB gave specifics about discussions about sexual relationships that were held. She was also concerned that she was not provided sufficient information about how therapy would work, or that a treatment plan was ever discussed. Throughout the therapy, RB had doubts about the therapy, and expressed this to Dr. Sitsuris, concerned that she wasn't sure whether therapy was beneficial, and concerned about there being mutual attraction. When RB asked Dr. Sitsuris if he was attracted to RB, he replied that he did not know how to answer that. Many of RB's concerns were dismissed and said that they would be talked about in session, but they were not. RB decided to continue therapy with him because it had been difficult to find a therapist. And so she tried to set some boundaries with Dr. Sitsuris and no longer discuss relationships or dating status. They continued therapy once per week for several months. and again, did not want to discuss her relationships. However, Dr. Sitsuris encouraged her to, and she started talking about intimate relationships she had had. RB also reported that she was concerned about her drinking, and RB and Dr. Sitsuris offered RB that she could call him whenever she had the urge to drink. There was a concern by RB that outside contact from the therapy session would be considered flirting. But then there was a number of times that there was texting and phone calls, and that those increased. And RB would, Dr. Sitsuris frequently returned those calls and responded to texts. She also was concerned that Dr. Sitsuris took numerous breaks during their time together, often skipping a session nearly every month. She asked for assignments as a substitute, but did not receive any. She also asked about her diagnosis, and he had a difficult time coming up with the answer, but stated, did give one diagnosis. But stated that he does not like to diagnose people or label them. RB continued to ask how therapy works and what the plan is and where they were going. His only response was to keep discussing different topics. RB also believed Dr. Sitsuris was doing things and saying things to make himself seem more attractive to RB as a romantic mate. Because of these factors, RB texted him in mid-December to end therapy, but then reconsidered and wanted more time to think about it. Dr. Sitsuris called her, nearly yelling, stating that he wants to keep working with her. So she agreed to, and they had a few more sessions in January of 2021. However, she texted and said that she could not continue with this. Again, he tried to convince her to stay. There was additional texts and an email from RB, but Dr. Sitsuris did not respond. Several more calls about ending termination or terminating therapy or not. and it was, there was miscommunication about whether the therapy session was in or whether therapy was terminated or not. So Dr. Sixeris offered to have more sessions as part of the termination process. And offered referrals, which she agreed to. She also requested her records on January 15th of 2021. On January 17th, Dr. Sixeris called and RB and said that she needed to submit a formal request. Dr. Sixeris kept texting RB to call him, but she did not want to speak with him. And she began seeing a new psychologist on January 24th, 2021. She did receive the notes, her clinical record on January 26, 2021. On March 10th, 2021, the board received Dr. Sixeris's response in a timely manner via his attorney, Farron Akins, and also submitted the complete clinical record. Dr. Sixeris graduated from Arizona School of Professional Psychology in 2012. Training included working in the Department of Juvenile Corrections in an adult substance abuse rehabilitation center and private practice. Since 2017, he has maintained a full-time caseload of therapy clients. He works with individuals, couples, and a diverse range of mood and personality disorders. He summarizes his work with RB. All sessions were done through telepsych. He unequivocally denies all of the allegations, noting that he never encouraged sexual feelings during treatment and emphasized boundaries of the therapeutic process. Did not abandon RB by terminating therapy, but rather responded to RB's statements both verbally and in writing that she no longer wished to continue treatment with him. He also conducted proper termination procedures and provided RB with referrals. He did not delay in sending records and promptly sent them once he received the written request and was confident of the most secure and appropriate means to transmit the documents to her. He noted that he explained his approach to therapy, that he asked for a clarification on this along with the consent forms. Records of text messages and phone calls were submitted. And Dr. Sitsiris consulted with several attorneys through the trust. Also stated that their last session was January 15th, 2021. And that he had submitted the records by January 27th. Through consultation, he decided not to have a final session with her. Further, he denied the rest of the allegations from RB. And suggested that he was concerned that RB may have entered treatment with the hope to engage him in a sexual encounter. And he was clear that that would not happen. feels that this was a more complex case than what he originally thought. And would have considered referral to someone with more expertise had therapy continued. Dr. Sitsuris feels that areas in which he could improve include limited self-disclosure, improving and better explaining documentation, obtaining information from prior treatment records. However, he denied all of the requests or denied all of the allegations and requests that the complaint be dismissed. And that concludes my summary of the case.
Thank you, Dr. Meyer. I do believe the complainant, RB, is present with us today. RB, if you'd like to take yourself off mute, I'd like to give you opportunity if you would like to make a statement, an opening statement, and then the board members may have questions for you.
Okay. My presentation is further reflection about my experience as a patient of Mr. Sutsuri. Since I wrote my original complaints, I've kept it succinct, and within the 5-minute time limit. From the beginning, Vaughn inserted his sexual presence by saying that he sexualizes his patients. He also maintained that I validate his attractiveness throughout our relationship. I realize now that I was wanting to protect him from embarrassment or accusation when I would comment on mutual attraction in place of, I feel uncomfortable that you said you sexualize your patients. For he expressed injury and sensitivity to comments he perceived were not illuminating him as an ideal suitor. There were a few ways of his doing therapy that caused me to feel uneasy. The texting and phone calls via his personal phone felt intrusive, confusing, and caused me a lot of anxiety, mostly because during those calls, I was pressured to not say more than a sentence or two, as he told me it was inappropriate for us to have long phone calls. This caused me to feel like I was doing something wrong or bad when he would call, but he refused to communicate any other way than phone calls. Also, he insisted on narratives of hopelessness and insisting that I am subservient to men rather than helping me to feel uplifted or strong. For example, the day I moved into my bigger, newer office was one of the happiest days of my life, but he seemed to barely notice and did not congratulate me. This was further proven to me within his notes, which state I was anxious on that date and that I talked of negative things only. His notes were altogether useless in my sourcing any clues as to our therapeutic process and seemed to be written for insurance companies and this board rather than for me as I had asked for. Overall, I have concluded that Vaughn's style of psychology is to be a type of masculine hero who overly inserts his presence as the tool of healing rather than being objective and pragmatically using other methods, as if his personality was the doorway to healing, creating a dependence on his presence. I do believe that upon reading my complaint, he was most likely surprised by its content, that he was either oblivious to his effect on me or neglectful, both situations being alarming. I believe now that he was mad that I did not accept his masculine or hero type presence as the right type of therapy for me. He did not have the resources nor the wherewithal to refer me out or to admit he was out of his depth. He lacked the necessary skills to ease my anxiety and improve my life. I do seek therapy to improve my life and hold my therapists as important figures that I treasure, and that has felt reciprocal from all my other therapists except with Vaughn. And that's what ended it when I demanded he tell me what he likes about me and our work together, for he had insisted that he wanted me to stay in therapy with him and that his type of therapy was the best type of therapy for me many times. But upon my request, he said that he had nothing to say and ended the relationship. In reflection, I believe him that he had nothing nice to say about me because I believe I was a conquest to him above all else. I believe he does not like demands and proved this when he told me that he had given away the appointments and I could get on his wait list rather than offering me referrals or a last session when I asked for them. And after this, when he felt forced to give me a termination session because I said I thought of filing a complaint for abandonment. During that meeting, he admitted no wrongdoing. He only accused me of breaking trust, being sneaky, threatening him, having abandonment issues with men, and that my upset feelings were derived from him not being available to me as a romantic or sexual partner. I'm willing to offer the recording of this last meeting to the board. Thank you so much for reviewing my complaint, and I do hope that you choose to investigate this further.
Thank you, RB. Board members, do you have any questions for RB? Dr. Meyer, Dr. Gill?
Yes, I'd like to ask RB, what was her understanding regarding Dr. Sutoris's policy about texting and phone calling between sessions?
There was no outline policy. I can compare with my current therapist. My current therapist, we talk through simple practice. I feel like that's a much better way to communicate. Vaughn really just left it open. He just said I could text him and call whenever I needed. He often calls and texted back immediately or pretty quickly. Does that answer your question?
Yes. Yes, it does. Did he treat you for...
Do we need to go in an executive session?
Yeah, I'm kind of worried about asking my next question.
So you want to make a motion?
Could we meet in executive session?
To discuss.
I'm sorry. I'd like to make a motion to meet in executive session.
Thank you.
Second. And that would be for the purpose of reviewing confidential health information.
For the purpose of reviewing confidential health information.
And let's be sure to bring the doctor and Farron Akins in, please.
All right. And Dr. Myers, I think you seconded?
Seconded.
All right. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All right. All right. Now we are magically going to move into executive session. And we magically reappear. We are back in regular session. Are there any further questions for RB?
Madam Chair, I would like to ask one question.
Dr. Myers.
Thank you for being here, RB. Did you receive the records of the text messages submitted by Dr. Sitsiris?
Yeah, I received some.
Okay. There's a number of text messages, I believe, that are from you over several days, especially in November, that it does not seem like were responded to by Dr. Sitsiris. Is that your recollection?
Yeah, because he likes to respond on phone calls.
Okay, so you would text and then he would call you back?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
All right, any further questions for RB? All right, hearing none. Thank you, RB. We are now going to talk to Dr. Soros. I do believe he is represented by Dr. Akins. I'd like to, if you two would first introduce yourselves and then give you an opportunity to make any comments, whether it's through your attorney or Dr. Soros yourself. So if you could officially introduce yourself. Dr. Akins, you're on mute.
Thank you. Always an adventure. I'm Farron Akins. I'm a counsel for your licensee. I'll let the doctor introduce himself, and then I know he has a few words. I'm going to withhold comments until we get into the testimony part of this. But for the moment, let me simply turn over to the doctor, and we can go from there.
Doctor, if you could officially introduce yourself and provide some your comments.
Yes, hi, I am Dr. Vaughn Sitsiris. Should I go ahead and start? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, first I would like to thank the board for allowing me to respond to the allegations levied against me by RB. In the beginning stages of therapy, she complains that she was not well informed about treatment. However, there is a paragraph in my informed consent document that clearly outlines my therapeutic approach, which is primarily depth-oriented in nature. I then re-explained this to RB, as I do to all incoming patients at the outset of therapy. And I do inquire if they have any questions about that approach. When she didn't, I began. And then at the end of the session, again, as I do with all patients, I do check in to see how they felt about working with me today and how they received my therapeutic style. She did not voice any confusion or dissatisfaction and was willing to schedule more sessions in the future. And soon after we began, she actually desired multiple sessions per week. She also inquired about the treatment plan or complained that I complained about a lack of a treatment plan. As submitted, I did utilize Wiley treatment planners, which that's how I derive my treatment plans. And they're derived from a wide variety of evidence-based interventions. They are very general in nature, and I did attempt to make them very specific to RB. In particular, I did comment on a very salient theme that I was noticing in therapy, which was depression, which I did.
Doctor, we need to not make any medical health.
Okay.
Ms. Galvin, help me out here. You can't anything that's a diagnosis or anything. So we need to keep that general. If we need to speak about that, we can do that and we will go in executive session. So that's not an issue.
I apologize.
No, you're fine.
I did comment on themes of loneliness, fears of not being able to establish secure relationships, as well as instances of excessive alcohol intake, which these were bedrock themes I believe we'd be working on together throughout our course of therapy. She accuses me of trying to also create sexual feelings within the relationship through a variety of verbal and nonverbal behaviors. I categorically deny ever making any of these statements or engaging in any of these sexually suggested behaviors, as I do realize they are highly inappropriate and highly damaging. I also documented several instances in which she actually becomes frustrated with me for not admitting to a mutual attraction, as well as my efforts to reinforce the therapeutic boundaries, where I did remind her I was interested in treating her as a psychotherapy patient and nothing more. There was also another documented incident where she accuses me of becoming overly cold and clinical. She also accuses me of abandonment. In the beginning of January, on the 11th, she sent a variety of text messages, emails, and a documented phone call, clearly indicating a desire to terminate therapy, which she did become somewhat aggressive with me. The following day, she contacted me wanting to come back to therapy. At this time, I had failed her appointment slots. It was at this point where she did threaten me with a board complaint. I was able to bring her back later in the week at her usual time in order to discuss the matter further, the possibility of continuing therapy, but I was quite doubtful at that time. And before then, I did schedule a consult with Dr. Eric Harris of Trust Risk Management Services. Dr. Harris agreed with my assessment that her statements did qualify as termination, and then did guide me through an appropriate termination phase, which I followed, which met APA standards for termination. Finally, is the issue of withholding records. I did begin preparing the records on the weekend of the 15th of January. She did contact me on the 17th, asking if she should submit a written request, which I agreed to, even though she did provide an earlier email. While I realized would suffice for releasing records, it probably would be a higher standard to receive the formal written request. She did send that to me, she told me, on the 17th. And as I began prepping the records, I then did schedule a consult with Dr. Jeffrey Youngren of the Trust to figure out the best way to disseminate the records in this difficult case. Dr. Youngren did advise for me to wait for the written response to arrive and then send the records via certified mail, as opposed to any type of electronic means, to send in the most secure possible manner. According to read receipts and contact from RB, the records were received on the 27th. This is well within the stipulated 30-day HIPAA guidelines of releasing records. So in summation, I again thank this board for allowing me to respond to the allegations. I do note some areas of my practice that can improve, although I did conduct, I believe, adequate practices throughout, and I respectfully ask that you dismiss this complaint.
Thank you. Board members, do you have questions for the doctor? Dr. Myers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Dr. Sitsiris. Appreciate your response. A couple of questions I have about your documentation. The text messages report a number of responses, primarily in November, and it looks like it was primarily in response to concerns about RB drinking that she responded to you. I guess my first question is, did you encourage her to text her anytime she was considering drinking?
Well, yes, I did encourage her to contact me, preferably by phone, if she did have the desire to drink. I do find it helpful in my practice with patients who are struggling with substance abuse to have brief talks with them when they're having the urge to use, as the social support does help with reducing alcohol intake. It was also my experience in my practice that patients who do have substance abuse problem can decompensate into more serious behaviors such as self-harm, which I did want to prevent in this case.
I could not find any records documenting those phone calls, any progress notes, or it looks like you also have contact notes where you outline some emails, but I didn't see any notes about those phone calls. Did I miss those, or did you not document them?
I thought I documented some in the chart notes. It's possible. I'd have to recheck my file. I possibly could have improved in that area.
Okay. And then the other question I had is about telepsychology practices. I could not find a telepsychology risk assessment anywhere in the documentation as required by state statute. Did you complete a telepsychology risk assessment for RB?
Are you talking about the form with the emergency contact?
Emergency contact, appropriateness for telepsychology services, risk analysis, risk assessment.
I did have the telepsychology informed consent. I did not have the emergency contact form.
Okay. Was there a in-person option for treatment that you set up for her if she needed in-person services?
Unfortunately, due to the height of the pandemic, I didn't think it was appropriate to have in-person services.
Not necessarily with her, but a requirement is that if when providing telepsychology, if there is a crisis, that there is an in-person option, not necessarily through you, but through another agency, for your client to be able to seek in-person services.
In my informed consent documents, there is a number for the emergency room, an emergency room if such services are needed.
Okay. Thank you. Those are all of my questions.
Dr. Gill.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Sitsiris, for being here today and for your presentation. I was initially impressed that you had contacted Dr. Harris, Dr. Youngren, but I had a concern about it. I thought that the timing, it would have been helpful if you had contacted them earlier in the process. And I have a question regarding that. When you found that there was what clinicians call an erotic transference or an attraction that this patient may have had to you, did you consult on this case with at that time?
I did have informal consultations with colleagues.
I mean, from reviewing the documentation, it seems to me that this problem of the erratic transference never got appropriately addressed and eventually seemingly got out of control in the therapy. And if I could make reference to the notes that I wrote down here, I think the patient initially reported that she had a bad ending to a prior therapy. And furthermore, she made reference to prior therapies that didn't go well. And I know that you said you'd want to improve in these areas. You would wish perhaps that you had contacted these former therapists. But from the appearance here, it sounds like you may have stepped into the same trap that these former therapists did, and you got caught up in this transference, and it never got resolved. Then it ended up the way it did. And it seems to me that you had to address this question, either that you are not appropriate, perhaps you didn't have the training or the background for this kind of treatment, or that you documented consultation with an expert in this area or somebody well-versed in this area so that you could have the assistance that you needed to address this issue forthwith. And I think that's what's missing in this therapy and the documentation and the treatment plan. And your therapy went the way of the prior therapies as a result.
Dr. Terrari, I'm sorry.
Would you comment on that, please?
Thank you.
Could I perhaps have a minute to contact my attorney?
I'm sorry, what?
Would it be appropriate for me to contact my attorney?
Ms. Galvin, can you give me some insight here?
Yeah, we could take a brief recess so Farron could consult with his client. Would 10 minutes be okay, Farron?
That's fine. What I'm going to suggest is that just leave all the video conferencing set up the way it is. I'll leave the room. The doctor can leave the room, and we have our cell phones with us, and he can immediately call me, and I'll keep an eye on the clock for about 10 minutes, and then we'll simply come back, and you'll see that we're back on camera.
Right. Or you can just turn your cameras off and mute yourselves, too, if you don't want to actually leave the link.
Great. Very good.
All right. So, everybody, we're going to return at 9:22, so just take a break, grab a snack, and we'll be back then. Welcome back to We're Back into Regular Session. I believe the doctor, you are going to answer a question, Dr. Soares?
Yes. I did have informal conversations with my previous postdoc supervisor about this, as well as I did bring this extensively into my own personal therapy. And I did think that helped prepare me to some degree, but perhaps in retrospect, it could have been more appropriate to refer this case out.
Thank you. You had said that you also consulted with other colleagues. Did you document that consultation?
I did not document those informal consultations, no.
I also had a question or a concern about the texting and the phone calling. I looked through the informed consent. I didn't see there was a discussion about, the phone calling, but not the texting and the emailing. I didn't see anything in there about texting and emailing and any policies you may have with respect to texting and emailing your patients. Would I be correct?
Yes, that is.
Okay. And I think that's the end of my questions. Thank you very much, doctor.
Okay.
Dr. Meyer? I have a couple of questions. So in regards to, there was comments that were, claims that were made that you talked about your personal life, your personal relationships or things. Could you elaborate on that and what did or did not occur in those meetings?
I believe I did mention a few details about my personal life as they did come up in therapy. I believe I did mention I was single at one point. I certainly didn't talk about dating or ever talk about any desire to date RB.
And when you felt as though she, if, when, at what point did you feel as though there was an attraction, or how do you handle that? So just so you know, I'm not a psychologist. I represent the general public. So at what point did you feel as though that there were issues and that you should take measures to address them in regards to the relationship or her perceived?
Well, when she became frustrated with me for not admitting to a mutual attraction, that's when I felt that it was very important to make clear that there was no mutual attraction.
Okay.
And that I did see her as a psychotherapy patient as a means to reinforce boundaries.
Mm-hmm. And did you supply her with other potential psychologists that could address her needs when she left your services?
Yes, I believe I did. I referred you to a number of experienced colleagues as well as some other therapy groups.
Okay, thank you. Board members, any other questions? All right, hearing none, thank you, doctor. The committee now will go into deliberations. This is a time for the committee members to deliberate amongst ourselves. And I will let Dr. Myers, would you please start deliberations as you're the lead?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I do see a couple of concerns here in regard to primarily record keeping, that there are not, for the complexity of this case, the concerns that the RB has brought up, there is not a sufficient amount of documentation of these issues. And with the texting and the emails and the phone calls, most of those aren't documented as case notes either. And so that's my biggest concern. And then with the additional missing a couple of documentation requirements for telepsychology, I do see those as concerns. Boundary issues, I think, is not quite as clear cut, but again, with the lack of clarity about responding outside of their scheduled therapy sessions, there are some concerns.
Thank you, Dr. Gill.
Yes, I have some concerns as well. I think, you know, when there is texting and you don't know when the texts are going to occur, and the emailing, and it's the back and forth, even if what Dr. Sutoris said, that they don't happen every night, which is what the patient was claiming, nevertheless, it wasn't in the informed consent. There didn't seem to be a strict policy about it. I see that as a boundary issue and a significant one. There's problems with documentation. If you're going to consult, even informally, particularly on a matter this important, then you document in the record that you consulted with the colleague, particularly when you're dealing with this kind of what we call transference, this kind of issue that every clinician runs into this. And then the clinician has to decide, am I competent to address this issue, or do I refer it out, or do I consult with someone who has perhaps more experience than me, or at least someone to sort this out with, to see if I should continue with this. And I made the point before that this was a patient who had previous unfortunate experiences in therapy, and that was grist for the mill as far as I'm concerned. And I really have a concern about the conduct of this therapy and how it was performed. And I think the outcome, I know it's easy to look back on things, and I know that this is a very difficult and challenging case, and no clinician could waltz through a case like this, in my opinion. Nevertheless, Dr. Sutoris has the background to know that he was in for a real challenge, and I don't think he acted appropriately in a timely manner. I think he called Dr. Harris and Dr. Youngren at the end of the treatment, and that was appropriate. And these people are the best in the business at providing addressing ethical issues. But nevertheless, it should have been done a lot earlier. And the treatment plan as a result kind of wasn't moving in the right direction, I'll put it that way. So I have concerns about the conduct of this therapy. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
All right. So what I think I'm hearing is potential violation of ARS 3220.61.16 on professional conduct, and H, failing or refusing to maintain or retain adequate business, financial, or professional records pertaining to psychological services provided to a client or patient. In regards, Dr. Gill, in regards to your concerns, I'm not sure. I'm trying to see if there are violation of the law.
Well, I would put it under avoiding harm, 3.04.
3.04 under the ethics codes?
Yes.
It would be DD 3.04.
All right. So what I think then what I've heard is ARS 3220.61.16 unprofessional conduct H, which is the records, and then DD violation of ethical standards adopted by the board, and that ethical standard is 3.04. Is that pretty much so with that?
That works for me.
All right. If I may, Dr. Meyer had mentioned failing to comply with statutes relating to telehealth. So and that
I think that falls under the documentation.
Okay.
Sorry, finish your thought though. I'm sorry I interrupted.
No, it could. We also have K, violating any federal or state law rules that relate to the practice of psychology. And then we could cite the statute on telehealth relating to the documentation that is necessary for telehealth.
And do you have the citation for that? I don't have it in front of me.
I'm looking at K, and then I'm looking up the telehealth. But we can always add that in later if the board or committee includes that as part of its motion.
So I think K would take that into account.
K would take that into account. We would just add the specific telehealth statute.
All right. So I will go ahead and make the motion. Is there any further discussion? Sorry, I didn't mean to jump. Any further discussion? None. Hearing none. I'll go ahead and I'll make the motion that we move this to the full board with a potential violation of ARS 3220.61.16 under professional conduct under H, failing or refusing to maintain or retain adequate business, financial, or professional records pertaining to psychological services provided to a client or patient, and K, violation of any federal or state laws or rules that relate to the practice of psychology or to obtaining a license to practice psychology. And then DD, violating of ethical standards adopted by the board, and that ethical standard is 3.04. So that is my motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Discussion. The K, did you say K?
I did.
Because that's violating state laws or rules.
I think that's violating a board rule regarding telehealth, which I think, as Jean was discussing, is rule R4-26-110, providing psychological services by telehealth.
Right. Never mind. I missed the or. I was thinking that was just pertaining to getting the license, but no. Okay.
Okay. So we have a motion. We have a second. Any further discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. All the parties will be contacted by the board in regards to when the meeting, when this case will be placed on the full board's agenda. So we do appreciate you being here today. We are now going to move on to our next case, case number T2101 for Carol Basil. Dr. Gil, you're the lead. Would you like to provide a brief summary?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This complaint is characterized as T21-10. Respondent is Carol Basil, and the complainant is anonymous. Some background information. Ms. Basil is a certified school psychologist, and she holds no license as a psychologist with this board. She works as an independent contractor for Sunlight Center for Change, otherwise known as Sunlight, an outpatient treatment center in Tucson, Arizona, owned and operated by Dr. Holly Joubert Saidi. She is a licensed psychologist. In February of 2021, the board received an anonymous complaint alleging that Ms. Basil is currently advertising and misrepresenting that she is a licensed psychologist in Arizona. A printout of the June 11th, 2020 Facebook ad from Sunlight's Facebook page was included in the complaint, which stated that the next, quote, co-parenting for change, unquote, class will be run by Virginia Pope and co-facilitated by Ms. Basil, who is a nationally certified and licensed school psychologist. There was also a reference in that Facebook page using the term psychology independently, apart from the term school. In March of 2021, Dr. Joubert submitted a response on Ms. Basil's behalf, indicating that she created the Facebook page or the ad that was posted and admitted to incorrect credentials for Ms. Basil, but the error was fixed once Ms. Basil brought it to her attention. It's my understanding that there was some confusion over whether, in fact, the Facebook page was fixed, but I was assured by staff that at this point in time, it is now corrected. Complaint. On February the 11th, the board received an anonymous complaint via fax as follows, quote, misrepresenting self as a licensed psychologist in the state of Arizona, engaging in clinical, supervisorial, and forensic work in Tucson, Arizona, unquote. The complaint did not contain any additional written information or determine that a complaint shall be open for investigation. The complaint included a screenshot of a Facebook posting dated June the 11th, 2020 from Sunlight's page. The website for Sunlight accused by board staff, accessed by board staff on February of 2021 states that the co-parenting class is currently run by Carol Basil, ED, National Certified School Counselor, and another master's level individual. Ms. Basil's school psychology credentials were not mentioned on the website when accessed in February of 2021 or in April of 2021. Staff submitted correspondence to Ms. Basil on February the 11th of 2021. The board sent a correspondence, quote, it has come to the attention of the board that you may be in possible violation of Arizona Revised Statutes, ARS 32-2084. The statute prohibits the use of a combination of words, initials, symbols, for the public to believe that the person making the representation is licensed to practice psychology in Arizona. The statute prohibition also applies to use of the designation psychology, psychotherapist, psychological, or other deviations for the root word psycho. It is a class two misdemeanor for a person not licensed pursuant to this chapter to engage in the practice of psychology. Board records indicate that Ms. Basil is a licensed behavioral analyst in Texas, but not in Arizona. However, the complaint received by the board on February the 10th alleges that Ms. Basil may be holding herself out to be a licensed psychologist and acting as a forensic supervisor. If true, the allegation may be a violation of the law. Board requested a written reply to the complaint. The response is as follows. On March the 12th, 2021, Dr. Joubert submitted a one-page initial response on behalf of Ms. Basil. She said as follows, the posting of our group was something I manage. It was put online to advertise our co-parenting class, which Ms. Basil runs. I initially posted incorrect credentials for Ms. Basil as being licensed, when in actuality, she is a nationally certified school psychologist. When Ms. Basil saw the posting, she immediately corrected it with Dr. Joubert, who then updated the posting to reflect the change. According to our staff, the Facebook page with the error has now been corrected. The error was not made elsewhere as far as Dr. Joubert was aware. The distribution of all the materials and paperwork reflects Ms. Basil's correct degree and certification. Ms. Basil works as an independent contractor with Sunlight. Her main function is to conduct psychological testing for clients, but has also provided therapeutic visits for court under my supervision. To my knowledge, there is nothing prohibiting her from doing so as long as there is a distinguishment that is provided up front to the clients, as is done so in our intake and the intake paperwork. Court contract does not require a licensed psychologist to provide this service. The services she provides is as a coach to parents who are working on their parenting skills and observing the child parental interactions in order to determine the degree to which the child is comfortable and or attached to the parent and that level of attachment. Ms. Basil is highly and uniquely qualified for this, given her experience in education and child development. Notification for the court-ordered therapeutic services. This includes a notification that one is remanded by the court for therapeutic services. It provides information about the provider and about the limits of the provider's responsibilities. It includes provider training and qualifications that made reference to Dr. Joubert and Ms. Basil. Now, the board staff note, in April of 2021, board exchanged two emails with Ms. Basil. Ms. Basil had been a certified school psychologist since 1990. Ms. Basil stated she never purported herself or presented herself as a licensed psychologist. A previous employee of Sunlight Center for Change sent out a flyer advertising the class we teach on co-parenting without my knowledge and incorrectly identified me, that is Ms. Basil, as a licensed school psychologist. School psychologists are certified, not licensed, in Arizona by the Arizona Department of Education. This error was not brought to my attention until the board complaint was submitted. The error occurred many months ago and has since been corrected. That completes my summary of this case.
Thank you, Dr.
I just want to clarify one statement that Dr. Gill had cited from the report that was an error. It was indicated in there that she was a licensed behavior analyst. That information was accidentally copied from another report, so that does not apply to this case.
Oh, thank you for the clarification. All right, so there is no there's no complainant, anonymous complainant, so they are not here. Ms. Basil, you are here. Thank you for being here today. Would you like to make any comments?
Again, I was not involved at all in the creation of a flyer. I did not know about the flyer. Holly Joubert remembered better than me that once I was aware of the flyer, I immediately corrected and made sure she understood the distinction between the mental health licensure versus school in Arizona certification and corrected that. I forgot about that. It's been many, many months. I was not aware of the flyer being circulated until the board complaint. Again, I have never purported nor purport to be a licensed psychologist. I know very well that I'm a school psychologist and very proud to be a school psychologist and practice within my scope of expertise.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Basil? Is it Dr. Basil?
No.
No, Ms. Basil.
I do want to also note that we have Dr. Joubert here today.
Yes, as well as I was going to bring her up. Thank you. Yeah, Dr. Joubert, I know you're kind of in this loop here. Would you like to make any comments? You're on mute. There you go.
I just took it off. Yeah. No, nothing to add to what I had wrote in. I it was an error on my part, and I believed I fixed it. So I really hope that's done.
All right. So just to be clear, Ms. Basil, so for the record, you are not providing any services outside the scope of a school psychologist. Is that correct?
Never.
Okay.
And any psychometric services I provide for Sunlight are under the supervision of a licensed psychologist, Dr. Joubert.
All right. And Dr. Joubert, was this a human error mistake that was placed on there?
Yeah.
And it has been fixed.
Yes.
Okay. Those are my questions. Dr. Meyer, Dr. Gill, any questions from you? Dr. Gill?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to ask Ms. Basil, what services do you provide to the court?
Therapeutic supervised visits. And that's essentially it.
Well, you do perform psychological testing?
Well, yes, I do that, but yes.
And you provide therapeutic services?
Supervised visitation services. Those are supervising interactions between parent and children, looking at the interactions and relationship between parents and children.
And do you write a report?
Yes.
Do you submit a diagnosis?
No.
Okay. And and I guess the complaint indicated that you're accused of doing forensic assessments, but do you care to comment on that? Do you provide a forensic assessment?
No, I work with Dr. Joubert in completing forensic evaluations. My services are more in the psychometric realm. I certainly do, write up what I the findings and interviewing information, so I contribute to the report, but all the services are under Dr. Joubert's supervision. And any corrections, anything that's inappropriate is caught well before the report goes out.
Are you typically a witness in court?
Not typically. I have been called.
When you're doing court work, are you typically called as a witness?
I can be called to discuss my observations in therapeutic supervised visits, yes.
And you make yourself clear that you are a certified school psychologist as part of that role as a witness, part of that
Always.
Role in conducting the testing as well?
Always.
So the people know that you're a certified school psychologist.
I always sign my name, Carol Basil, EDS, nationally certified school psychologist. It's very clear.
And And with respect to fees, you are not paid as a licensed psychologist, is that correct?
No.
Because they have a fee structure in the paperwork, and the licensed psychologist is paid at a certain rate. And I'm assuming that you're paid at a certain rate, meaning that in your role as a school psychologist. So I wanted to be sure that you are not paid as a licensed psychologist. That's all the questions that I have.
Dr. Joubert had a comment.
Dr. Joubert, did you have a comment, a follow-up?
Yeah, the other thing that I wanted to add was that we go so far as to even submit our own wording for court orders so that our information is correct in there, because sometimes that gets misconstrued by attorneys when they write it. So we submit that information to them if we're required to have a court order for a case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions? Dr. Meyer.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Basil, for being here. My understanding is that to provide any type of psychological services, such as testing or court-ordered therapeutic services, a school psychologist must be practicing within a school setting. Can you share... Can you explain to me your practice of psychological services outside of a school setting?
So I have completed courses in APA required courses through an APA program, qualified program through University of Nebraska, Omaha, as part of my school psychology training to perform testing in with children, adults, personality, intellectual testing, etc. So part of my expertise is evaluation of intellectual and social emotional issues for individuals through the lifespan. So that is not out of my realm of ability, okay? As far as providing recommendations, my recommendations are appropriate for the training I've received and for the situation. So even in school, we deal with mental health issues and provide recommendations relevant to both educational and recommendations to mental health issues that pop up. As far as supervising therapy requires, and Dr. Joubert will correct me, requires specific training, which I have documented and received certificates for through the Therapeutic Supervision Network, but it does not require a psychologist, licensed or otherwise, to perform those services. It requires documentation that you've taken courses and are able to provide that service.
So is it your contention that you can practice psychological services outside of a school setting with your school psychology certification?
What I'm saying is that under the supervision of a licensed psychologist, I can practice psychometric services that I am well qualified to provide. As far as supervised visitation services, that requires neither a licensed psychologist to perform, and I think I'm not even sure you need a master's level degree to perform those services. So those are, you know, can be performed by anybody who has this required training to provide that, which I do.
But you're holding yourself as a certified school psychologist when providing those services.
yes, I am a certified school psychologist. So I am accurately identifying who I am at all times.
Okay, thank you.
Question, Dr. Joubert, when the services that Ms. Basil provides for you, is it under the umbrella of the school? Are you working for the school or are you an independent psychologist? I'm trying to figure that out.
No, I'm an independent psychologist. The reason a school psychologist is invaluable, and I've worked with a number of them, is because we're looking at attachment dynamics with kids. I do parenting and custody evaluations for court. We have school meetings where we will consult with the school about the child's behavior, how they're performing academically. Carol goes to those meetings and consults with the teachers and interviews them. She has, I think, a really unique perspective and knowledge and training in that area that is value added for these kinds of evaluations, especially when we're dealing with kids that, you know, sometimes have learning disabilities or trying to distinguish between emotional problems and behavioral problems or learning issues or a combination.
All right, thank you. Are there any other questions?
Yes.
Dr. Gill?
Yes, Madam Chair. For Dr. Joubert, could you explain to us the nature and the need for this supervision?
Sure.
Because on the one hand, we're hearing about her competency, Ms. Basil's competency. On the other hand, we're hearing about supervision. So I'm not exactly clear the point of the supervision and why you're providing it.
Supervised cases come through when a parent is not able to be with their child for various reasons. So SV would be basic supervised visitation, which requires a GED for somebody to do that. And therapeutic supervised visits would be with helping with parenting coaching to give them feedback about their parenting style, how to interact with their child appropriately, like with discipline or interventions, those types of things. And that requires a master's degree. The additional training that I have my staff go through is through the Supervised Visitation Network. It's not actually required, but it's something that I felt really strongly all my staff should go through, including administrative, so that they have a thorough understanding for the boundaries and, really the appropriateness of different types of actions that parents should be taking when they are in the office and interacting with each other and with kids.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Gill?
No, I don't have any more questions.
Thank you. Dr. Myers?
Thank you. Ms. Basil, so when we're talking supervised therapeutic services, that means client is being the parenting interaction or whatever is being supervised. Are you being supervised by Dr. Joubert for those services?
My reports and notes, yes, are co-signed and reviewed by Dr. Joubert to make sure that the therapeutic portion of the service is appropriate for the family involved.
Okay. Do you have is there a supervision contract or any documentation of the supervisory process between the two of you?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So Dr. Basil, just so I understand, you kind of wear a lot of different hats. So you work for school, you're a school counselor. You also work for Dr. Joubert.
I'm not a counselor.
I'm sorry, as a school psychologist. You also work for Dr. Joubert, working on cases that she receives from the court, says maybe doing parenting, supervising and things like that. So is that correct? So two different employments? Yes. Okay. All right. Are there any other questions? Dr. Gill?
One final question. Ms. Basil, do you work anywhere else other than providing services for that's been the subject of this conversation? Are you working anywhere else at this time?
I'd like to respectfully keep this conversation based on this complaint and my work with Sunlight.
Well, what's behind my question is that there is a concern that you are acting as a licensed psychologist. I want to be sure that you're not doing this anywhere else.
I can assure you I am not. I never have. I will continue to say I never have held myself out to be a licensed psychologist. Whenever I define my role, it's as a school psychologist. I'm a school psychologist certified in Arizona and nationally certified.
Thank you very much, Ms. Basil. That's it for me.
Thank you. Dr. Myers, any further? Okay, I'd like to ask that, I'd like to make a motion we go into executive session. I'd like to get some legal advice from Ms. Galvin. Is there a second?
Seconded.
Again, a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All right, we are going to go into executive session. The committee will go in that. Just please, if you don't get moved, please stay where you are and we'll be joining back momentarily.
If we can wait just so we're all back, then the chair can respond to your request.
All right, are we all back? Perfect. I think someone requested to speak. Was that you, Ms. Basil?
Yes. I want to, am I recognized?
Yes, you're recognized. Please go ahead.
I want to make clear that NASS, the National Association of School Psychologists, does not forbid me from working outside of a school setting, practicing my skills outside of a school setting. And in fact, they do indicate mental health settings are one of the many settings in which I may practice my skills.
All right, thank you. And I do have one more question. Ms. Basil, do you have a MPI number?
Apparently I do, but it was the schools back in the 90s and early 2000s were getting medication. We're getting reimbursement from a program called Medicare in the Public Schools, MIPS. And so schools reached out and got MPI numbers for speech therapists, occupational physical therapists, school psychologists, so that we could potentially get reimbursed for some of the services we do. But that MPI number was strictly used for the Medicaid in the school's program and is obviously not something I can use for billing in a mental health setting. It was strictly for the MIPS program.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for any further questions for Ms. Basil or Dr. Joubert? Hearing none. All right. Thank you both for being here. The committee members are now going to deliberations. This is the time for the committee to discuss amongst ourselves. Dr. Gill, you are the lead on this. Would you like to start the discussions?
Well, it appears based upon our prior discussion that there is concern about, regardless of what the National School Psychology Board says, from the point of view of laws in the state of Arizona, that the issue is providing psychological testing outside of a school setting is an issue that we want to look at and perhaps recommend that this go to the full board. And that's all I have to say.
Dr. Meyer?
Yeah, I agree. The exception, Ms. Basil is practicing psychology, and since she's not in a school setting, the exception for school psychologists doesn't apply. So she's practicing psychology without a license. At least that's what it looks like. And so if we could look at records, look at the psychological evaluations that she's involved in, we could clarify that, but still, as well as requesting a supervision contract to see what that formal relationship is, but still move it to the board, full board. Like Dr.
I would agree. I would suggest that we move it to the board with possible violation of 32.2084A. And then also in moving it to the board, I think we'd like just some additional information. As Dr. Myers mentioned, if you could please provide, I would recommend it in my motion that that be a violation, and that we request a year's worth of calendar, letting our board staff pick five cases that Dr. Basil worked on. I think we'd want to see Dr. Basil's written synopsis of the psychometrics that were, you know, whatever report psychometrics that were provided, and then also what Dr. Javert's final report is, and maybe if we saw five of those, that would be very helpful to us in determining and looking at what exactly kind of work is being provided, as well as Dr. Myers mentioned, you said the supervisory contract?
Correct.
So I would make that my motion.
Seconded.
If I could clarify, you're looking to move it to the full board with the possible violation 32.2084 and 32.2072. Oh, no, not 72.
Not 72. I'm sorry. It's 32. Ms. Michelson?
3275. A1.
A1, 3275 A1. In addition, you want a calendar for the last year of appointments of cases involving Ms. Basil. Upon receipt of that calendar, staff will select five names at random. And then a subpoena. Do you want this done by subpoena? Subpoena the calendar, and then a subpoena for the records, both to Dr. Javert and Ms. Basil?
All right. So this is the work specifically for Dr. Javert.
I'm sorry, the work for?
Yeah, specifically. So it's not the calendar for her school, but the calendar, I just confirming.
Correct. Dr. Javert. Right. Okay. And that was your motion. And Dr. Meyer, I believe, seconded that. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So we have a motion. We have a second. Is there any discussion? All right, hearing none, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. The motion passes. Dr. Basil and Dr. Javert, you'll be both being notified by our staff on the next steps. And also you'll be receiving a subpoena for that information, and you can work with our this office staff on receiving that information. All right. Okay, we are now going to move to the last item on the agenda, which is adjournment. First of all, let me just say a big thank you to our staff for providing all this documentation and keeping it all straight so we can review it. And thank you, committee members, for reviewing it. It's been great working with you in the last calendar quarter. I guess we're off next calendar quarter. And Ms. Galvin, of course, thank you so much for your legal advice. We surely do appreciate you. So everyone, have a great month, and well, yes, we'll see you at the next major meeting.
We need a motion to adjourn.
We need a motion. See, I'm all excited. We're done. Sorry.
Move to adjourn.
Is there a motion?
Move to adjourn.
Move to adjourn. We had a motion and a second. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you.